Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Let's be frank, the name of that special program in place of Charity Nebbe's Talk of Iowa tomorrow at 10. In place of this program, tomorrow, Independence Day, Capitol steps, politics takes a holiday over the noon hour tomorrow, Wednesday, on the 4th of July. Well, a whole slew of new laws went into effect July 1st. Let's discuss as many of them as we can get to with our own Joyce Russell, IPR legislative correspondent in our Ames studio. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
In our Des Moines studio, Barbara Rodriguez, government and politics reporter for the Associated Press in Iowa. Barbara, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And if our listeners have any questions about new laws, 1-866-780-9100 or river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Let me start with you, Barbara, and have you address the sanctuary cities ban. A lot of this in the news, addressing cities, counties, municipalities that intentionally violate federal immigration law. So what is the new law here?
So it's basically aimed at local entities and, you know, city, county, law enforcement. It's aimed at ensuring that they follow immigration law, and if they don't, they risk losing funding. It's basically focused on the scenario where federal immigration could come in to law enforcement and ask them to hold an individual who is suspected of being in the country illegally. And that's at the heart of the legislation.
Mm-hmm. I know in discussions about this during the legislative session, there was a controversy in talking with local authorities, sort of the idea that some local authorities maintain there wasn't even a problem here, that the same cooperation has always existed, that will continue to exist.
Right. And they argued that it would potentially hinder their ability to work with immigrant communities, that it would possibly raise concerns about trust. And there has been questions about its legality because, you know, the question is, how long can you hold an individual who there's no means for holding them. There's the possibility that you could violate their constitutional rights. And so there are immigration attorneys and groups that oppose the legislation that pointed out that the state could find itself in some issues over litigation.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about mental health care. Joyce, mental health services expanding in Iowa. What are the facets of this new mental health care law?
Well, you know, we're not going to see this any kind of dramatic change right away, but this is a very detailed plan for, really, it's essentially what an effective mental health care system would look like once it is in effect. It expands services to take the strain off of law enforcement, sometimes emergency rooms that deal with mental health crises. There was a very strong mental health care lobby that followed this bill. And even though it goes into effect July 1st, they call it a start. Mm-hmm. There's a separate task force that will be working on funding options. And then at the same time, there's a new initiative that's been launched to come up with a companion plan for childhood mental illness, which the statewide system that's already in place for adults doesn't cover. And the governor just appointed that group today.
Mm-hmm. So. How bipartisan was this? Was this something that most legislators could get on board, regardless of party?
It was extremely bipartisan, and in fact, there had been a task force that came up with these recommendations, and it was a broad group of stakeholders: police, healthcare professionals, families, everybody that's been touched by mental illness and by weaknesses in the mental health system. They came up with this comprehensive plan, and actually the bill that was passed with a few additions was really just taking their plan, putting it into law, and passing it and sending it to the governor.
Part of it are these six regional, what are called access centers. Now, did they appear July 1st, or is that something we'll see gradually here? And is there a timeline? Do you know?
I don't know. There's no deadline for it. And as I said, funding is an issue. But in Johnson County, in your county there, for example, they have plans. You know, they're devising plans for this, and they presented those on to the legislature when they were considering this legislation on how that would work. It's hard to say when that will actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Barbara, keeping in the health sphere, health insurance, a new law that has to do with health insurance. What's that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's aimed at that population that may have been priced out of health insurance under the individual insurance market of the Affordable Care Act. And so this was an attempt by Republican Governor Kim Reynolds and Republicans. They pushed it strongly this session, legislation to allow the Iowa Farm Bureau to create these health care plans to address that population. It's interesting because they're not calling it insurance, even though I've spoken to a lot of people in the health insurance industry who say it is insurance, but the distinction allows it to not be as regulated by the state. And the idea with those plans, though, is that they may not have to comply with all of the rules of the Affordable Care Act, essential benefits that might be covered under the individual insurance market. And it's going to come down to specifics. So this is in place now. They won't really be available until 2019. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of information yet as to what's actually covered. If you have a pre-existing condition, are you going to get the same kind of benefits that you might expect otherwise? So there's a lot of questions still out there, but expect Reynolds and Republicans to really highlight that as their way of addressing the skyrocketing cost of health insurance.
Right. And the interesting point that some will not want to call it insurance. So I guess here, buyer beware, you pay what you get for, you get what you pay for in these health care plans, that it may be minimal in terms of what kind of coverage you have.
Exactly. And at the moment, the public doesn't have a lot of information yet as to what happens when you get sick and you're in this plan. And so while, again, it's being advertised as a big win for the state addressing that cost, does that mean that we have taken a step back in terms of coverage for individuals? And are we going back to a world where pre-existing conditions really limits your ability to be covered? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions still out there.
Right.
I would like to add that, you know, it tended to be Democrats who would argue, you know, sort of for Obamacare, for the Affordable Care Act and those kinds of protections. But when it got right down to the final vote, there were a lot of Democrats who voted for this bill because everybody, rural, urban, everybody has people in their district who are struggling to pay for health insurance.
And that's a really good point.
Mm. Barbara Rodriguez with us of the AP, Joyce Russell, our own legislative correspondent at Iowa Public Radio, flying over quickly at a glance as some of Iowa's new laws that went into effect July 1st. If you have a question, 1-866-780-9100. A new state law having to do with alcohol and driving, Joyce. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, this is the ignition interlock bill that we've talked a little bit about on this program. But it currently, if you have a drunk driving conviction, arrest and conviction, your license is automatically suspended for 6 months. However, there is something called a temporary license that you can get. And currently, that is just a license just to go to and from work. And currently, if you have had more than one drunk driving offense, or if you have a really bad drunk driving offense, in other words, way over the legal limit, then you're required to have this interlock ignition device that you breathe into it, and if you've been drinking, then you can't start your car. Well, what this bill does is extend that to more drivers, so that even if you've had just a first offense drunk driving, if you want to get a temporary restricted license, then you have to put one of these on your car, even if it's a first offense. But at the same time, the other change that's part of this, which is kind of interesting, is, as I said, currently you can only get this temporary license in order to drive only to work and back. This bill will allow you to drive anywhere. Mm. So it opens that up. And what the public safety people say is that the way it is now, or the way it was in the old law, the temporary license was so restrictive that some drivers would just drive with their suspended license, not get the restricted license, and just take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have to drive their kids to school or all kinds of, how we can all imagine how hard it is to drive, to be without a license. So
All right. Now
there will be an incentive to get that restricted license because it's going to be more useful. It will essentially be a new driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be this added safety of everyone having to get the ignition interlock. So I just consider this kind of a different approach to controlling drunk driving.
Mm-hmm. Jeff in Iowa City has an email on pertaining to this law. I don't know if it's too detailed to have either of you answer. Will the new law pertaining to interlock devices for DUI first offenses pertain to just those with offenses after July 1st, or would people with previous offenses still have to obtain an interlock device? Jeff shares, I had a first offense DUI 2 years ago, but have not yet reinstated my license, and I'm wondering if this will be required for me.
Well, I'm going to hazard a guess on this.
Okay.
And obviously, call the DOT and they can tell you. But, if it's been 2 years since his drunk driving offense, then his 6-month suspension would be over, and he should be able to just get his actual permanent license renewed now, no temporary license, and I'm assuming no requirements for the interlock because your suspension is over.
Right.
So the interlock device requirement is for drivers who get this temporary restricted license while their actual license is suspended. But that's just my best guess, and I would advise the listener to call the DOT.
Call the DOT. Get in touch with perhaps a probation officer, someone in that order to make sure you've got it down straight. Also concerning alcohol, a new law that limits lawsuits, sort of going in the other direction, limiting lawsuits against Iowa businesses serving alcoholic beverages to drunken drivers. Barbara, do you know about this?
Just a little bit. It essentially is going to cap some damages awarded in cases where businesses are selling alcohol to an individual who then ends up getting involved in later in some type of crash that involves an injury or death or some other, again, serious injury. At the time during the legislative session, I know my understanding is that a lot of businesses argued that the liability that came with the insurance for that was too high compared to some other states. And so there was a big push from the business industry to get this legislation through.
Let's go to a caller. Karen is with us in Grimes. What's your question, Karen, about our new laws?
Well, it's about an old law that was passed in 2013, the corporate tax cut. Is the legislature and the government going to backfill that for our county government because they're going to be running low on property taxes to help our schools and our hospitals and so forth?
Mm. Karen and Grimes, thanks. Joyce, Barbara, any comment on that?
I just want to note, this is Barbara, that it was a topic that was discussed extensively during the session, whether it was time to start reducing that backfill, with the argument being that the intention was never to have that backfill continue forever. At the end, they didn't agree on anything, but I would expect much more clear-cut legislation earlier next session that gives a much clearer timetable as to reducing the backfill. There were a couple of proposals that were floating around by the end of the session.
And Governor Reynolds, the main reason she gave for not going back on this promise of a backfill was that cities and counties and schools already had their budgets written, and they wouldn't want to pull that out from under them. But so the implication there, you can kind of read between the lines and say they're warned now. And I agree with Barbara. I think it's very likely that they'll take some action on that next year.
Less than 10 minutes of this flyover of new Iowa laws here. I have about a dozen things left on my list. We obviously aren't going to get to those, so I'm just going to reach out to each of you, pick out some of the ones you want to talk about here. I'll have a few questions. And Barbara, what's something we haven't talked about that you think our listeners should know about?
There was something I reported on recently about a self-promotion ban. It recently went into effect. It was kind of interesting. It was kind of tucked into an unrelated budget bill in the final hours of the legislative session. It basically bans the use of taxpayer dollars for statewide elected officials and state lawmakers to essentially promote their written name or their likeness or their voice there's an exemption that, you know, would clearly address much more run-of-the-mill communication between the official and a constituent. But the language is broad enough, and this Iowa Ethics Board now has to come up with its interpretation of the law. So it's really interesting. They haven't come out with an advisory opinion yet, but they're expected to in the next couple of weeks. And it's going to potentially address everything from, can, you know, does your likeness include appearing at the Iowa State Fair, for example? If you've purchased materials from years ago, does that fall under this ban now? And there's just all of these questions that they have to kind of grapple with, this ethics board. So I think that's kind of interesting, in part because there's not that many states that have kind of stepped onto this territory.
Right. Hard to draw a line. What is self-promotion? What is informing your constituents?
Exactly.
Where is that line? Big gray area there. Joyce, what else have you got on your list that we should know about?
Well, I think something that we may actually notice fairly soon is part of the big energy utilities bill that was passed, that one of the more controversial parts of this, although there was a lot of controversial parts in it, but one of the most controversial was the energy conservation, energy efficiency, a program that's been in place in Iowa for a number of years. Currently, anybody who pays your electric or gas bill to a rate-regulated utility, a certain percentage of their bill goes into an energy efficiency fund, and then that money is used for the programs that many of us are aware of rebates for energy efficiency appliance, home energy audits, reworking of insulation in your house, and all of those things. Well, currently, when you get your bill, a certain percentage of your bill is going to that, but it's not spelled out. And so this is going to, first of all, it's going to give everybody the option to opt out of that so that will no longer be taken out of their bill. And also it will be spelled out, according to this law, this will be spelled out on your bill. So it will say this certain amount that you're paying is going into this energy efficiency program. And the very strong Republican sentiment on this, that this was we were being taxed without knowing, and this was being charged to us and we didn't know it. And so, you know, the energy efficiency advocates are very concerned that once people have the option to opt out, that people will opt out and that fund is going to go way down. There'll be less money for these energy efficiency projects. But I'm going to be looking at my utility bill to see when this shows up there.
Question from Larry in Marion, listening. He wants us to hear about the move over, pull over for flashing light vehicles law. What is that?
Well, I'll jump in on that. Currently, the law requires you, as you're driving down the highway, if there's an emergency vehicle parked along the side of the road with flashing lights, then you're required to move over into the left lane if you can, and if you can't, to slow down.
Right, give at least a lane, if it's permitted, if you have the space, give at least a lane space, right?
Right. And this bill just expands that to other vehicles along the side of the road. Even if it's private vehicles, if they've got flashing lights, then it's called the new move over rule.
Okay, and, I think whoever has a flashing light.
That's right.
And what if I put a flashing light on?
Well, if you're in trouble, we recently had a car trouble and we put the emergency lights on. You know, I would rather, I'm parked on the side of the road. I would rather people
hazard
move
lights.
Over.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Not something you have to put on the roof of your car. A few minutes left. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I highlighted two kind of education related bills that I thought were interesting. One is just ensuring that school districts have some type of emergency plan in place in case of an active shooter situation. It was legislation that had been discussed early in the legislative session, but picked up a lot of steam after the Parkland shooting in February. School districts will have, my understanding is, at least another year before those plans have to be in place, but it is an interesting one to me. And it doesn't specify what those plans have to be. It's just that school districts have to have it in place. And second from that is another one that didn't get a lot of attention, but is just on the subject of virtual schools. Iowa actually allows the use of taxpayer money to go towards these for-profit companies that offer some online learning. And it's primarily worked through two school districts. And it's always had a cap on enrollment. And so this past legislative session, they got rid of the cap. And so I'm really curious to see what the appetite is in the state for this kind of virtual schools.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of appetite, lunch shaming was addressed by a new law, right? This is a situation where I guess a new law says kids can't be publicly shamed or stigmatized if they don't have money to pay for the lunches. This is, I guess, the scenario I've heard. You get to the end of the lunch line, you're long overdue paying for your lunches, and you've picked out a lunch and it goes in the trash, right?
Yes, that's my understanding of what was happening in the state. And I think ultimately the legislation's aimed at ensuring that school districts are communicating more with parents and guardians about it, making sure that they know that if they qualify for free or reduced lunch, that they are able to take advantage of it. But it's a subject that has gotten a lot more national attention in the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I think the state is kind of catching up with that.
Okay. We have just a few seconds left. Any final words, perhaps looking to the future and how any of these issues will be used in the campaign?
Oh, Joyce, I don't know if you want to step into that one first, but
just a very few seconds.
I just want to note that I think a lot of the legislation that was passed this year, you can expect it to play a role in the gubernatorial race, issues over abortion and health care. This is going to be really the first test of the 2016 elections in terms of Republican policy. So it'll be interesting to see how voters turn out.
Okay. And I think the Sanctuary Cities bill is likely to be on the Republican agenda as they campaign.
Okay. Thank you very much. Joyce Russell, IPR legislative correspondent, Barbara Rodriguez of the Associated Press in Iowa. Barbara, Joyce, thank you very much for this survey of new Iowa laws.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Help also today from Shirley Wong. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, have a happy holiday and tune in for our noon hour, Capital Steps, Politics Takes a Holiday. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.